to James chapter 1. We're going to be there again in this hour as we were in the first hour. Thankful again for those of you who are here as visitors with us. Glad that you've come to be with us and hope you can be with us anytime that you might be in this area in the future. In James chapter 1 and in verse 12 beginning, we notice the statement that is made by James with regard to temptation. It says, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good and perfect gift is from above, and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures." When we look at this passage, it talks to us about the nature of temptation. We had looked at it first with regard to the origin of that in the first lesson, and now with regard to its effect. That God brought us forth that we might be his first creatures, he says there at the end. It's the same thing that you really looked at in the beginning of that paragraph in verse 12 when he had pointed out that the Lord brought us and intends for us to endure through these temptations that we might in the end receive a crown of life. When you look at that idea of temptation, the concept is one that can be seen in various realms. In other words, it can be a testing, a trial, just something that happened, not with respect necessarily to an enticement for evil. Sometimes we have trials in this life of difficulties that may be physical that come along. All of that could fit within this term. But we're specifically looking at the second aspect of that, an enticement to sin. That's the way in which it's used here in James chapter 1, that enticement to sin. And as we look at that, we recognized in the first hour that it was not something that came from God. God did not tempt man. Well, how does it come? It comes by Satan. He's involved in that, always there, because he is the author of that which is evil. It always involves ourselves, if it's effective, because it brings us to be one who desires in league with or in parallel to that enticement to sin. If we did not have any desire to do those things of sin, there would be no enticement whatsoever. But when that idea of evil is together with our desire, we meet that with a sense that we would like to do that. Then you have temptation that has its effect in bringing us towards the way of evil. When you look at all sin, it involves self and the devil at least. And sometimes it involves, like we pointed out, that other person that may be there, whether it be with regard to a false teacher or someone who is an acquaintance that would bring us or enlist us into the things of sin, bringing up for us and putting before us things that we would not have thought of ourselves. That's how you have an origin to sin. But when we talk about the idea of its intended effect, what does God intend to do? Again, go back with me and notice that very clear point that is made there in James chapter 1 and in verse 12. Blessed is the man who what? Who endures temptation. For when he has been approved. There's the idea that God has. That's the intent that he has, is that we might go through this, endure, and in the end be approved in his sight. How? By doing that which is right. By withstanding that temptation and upholding that way which is right in the sight of God. Again, in the last verse, the point that is made, of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. God intends us to be those who would endure creation or he would endure temptation, pardon me, in the same way that he created us as his new creatures, by truth and by that word of truth. We were brought into that relationship with God by truth and were sustained through the perils that are there by that same way of truth. And so when we talk about that idea, blessed is the one who endures temptation because he's going to endure it. Because in the end there is that crown of life, that gets to the idea of the temptation and how God intends it to be done. A temptation to do wrong, after all, is also an opportunity to do right. In each and every case where there is that temptation to do wrong, there is equally, on the other side of that, the opportunity to do that which is right in the sight of God, that which is according to His will. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, surely a passage we brought up in the first hour, and that if you think about temptation, immediately comes to mind. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting with about verse 1 or so, we notice the fact that Israel had gone into the wilderness. They had all come with Moses together through the sea. God had intended to bring them into the promised land. Why is it that so many of them died in the wilderness? In fact, all of a generation except Joshua and Caleb perished there in the wilderness. It was because of the evil that was done. It was because of the sin. Now that's used as an example. In the sixth verse of 1 Corinthians 10, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, all these things happened to them as examples. And they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. That statement that God will, with the temptation, make the way of escape is something we need to keep in mind. It's not you sin, you go ahead and do what you want, you give in to your lust, and now God will give you an escape after that. That's not what this passage is talking about. This passage is talking about how do we do what that blessed man of verse 12 did. Endure temptation and come to a crown of life in the end. How do we do that? He says, well, with the temptation, God's given a way of escape. How did he do that? Well, he starts out and describes that one way he did that is through the examples of his word. When you look at those of old who went out of Egypt, God had called them all to go into his promised land. It was ready at that point. God was ready to give them that land. Why is it that only Joshua and Caleb ended up going there? It's because of their disobedience, because of their disbelief. That's the very point that's made very clear when you go to Hebrews chapters 3 and 4. There was the rest that was ready for them going into Canaan. They did not get it. Why? Because of their unbelief or because of their disobedience. Those two terms stand as being parallel. How? Because there was not within their heart that love for the Lord that's talked about here in James chapter 1. And instead, there was that going against God. That heart of faith was not there, and it led to a disobedience in their life as a result of that. So when we look and we see, here it may be that I'm called to a promised land, an ultimate one of heaven. How is it that I might fail to get there if I don't endure temptation the way that I ought? And I won't endure temptation as I ought if I do the same things that Israel did of old. What do I have to do instead? I have to act the opposite way. When there were those who called upon them to commit idolatry, did they have to commit idolatry because everybody else around them was doing it? No. They could have stood and said, no, I'm not going to do that. The very idea that Aaron has, that the people were the ones who brought this gold and all of this stuff, they were the ones who demanded this calf. Well, Aaron, did you have to do that just because the people wanted it? No, the leadership that was required of him, that God called upon him to do at that point, was to say, no, that's wrong in the sight of God, and I'm not going to participate. He failed to do that, and as a result, he was brought into sin. The same thing with sexual immorality. Many of them were given to that. That was a part of the idolatrous practice and the idolatrous worship of the Canaanites. They engaged in that. Did they have to? Young people, listen to me. Because someone comes to you and says to you, if you love me, you'll do this, doesn't mean you'd need to do it. They aren't the slightest bit concerned with your love. They're concerned with their own lust. And what you need to do is the very thing that those people in the wilderness did not do. And that's to stand up and say, I don't care how many of you are doing it. I'm not going to do it. No matter what the pressure is there, it's not going to happen. That's not only so with young people, that's so with older ones as well. Many times some women and some men get to that age of an empty nest syndrome. And there is that pull to prove themselves or to somehow validate themselves to see their worth. And it's something that's appealed to in adultery. Say no to that. That's not going to help you. That's not going to show your worth. It's not going to validate you. It's not going to make you feel more like the person that you want to be. I'll tell you what it's going to do. If you have a right idea about God at all in your heart, it's going to bring you to a guilt that you never knew before. It'll bring you to the greatest shame that's there. The way to endure temptation is to say no to it. And instead of doing that which is wrong, to stand up and do that which is right. That's exactly what this passage is talking about in 1 Corinthians 10 as you go down. If you think that you stand, you take heed lest you fall. Don't take that for granted. What do? You look at these examples. How many times do we think about the examples that God has given us in the Old Testament of those who succumbed to sin, who let that temptation have sway over them and involve themselves in a way of wrong? How many times do we think about the ruin that it brought upon their life? Because that's what sin brings. It does not bring a betterment. It does not bring the fullness of life and the peace that God wants you to have. It brings the absolute condemnation of God, and it brings the ruin of your life and of your soul. That's what sin does. How many times do we think about that? Because when we think about that, that is God's way of escape. That's what He wants us to do. And when that temptation comes along and I think about that, here's a temptation to be involved in fornication. I remember when that happened before back there in the wilderness. And when they did it, it brought them to ruin. But I also remember on the other side somebody by the name of Joseph. Then when that temptation came along and God told me about Joseph for a reason, then I might think about what he did and say no and resisting that and going away. How'd that work out for Joseph? In the end, it allowed God to use him in a way that he was brought to prominence, and you and I still think about him. You see, God has made that way of escape, not after we've messed up our life. Now, don't get me wrong. He would give us the salvation and the forgiveness that's found in Christ. That's true. He's made it possible, no matter what the stain of sin, for me to be forgiven. That's true. But you know, sin's going to always leave a scar that not doing it will spare you. Sin can be forgiven. The consequences of sin are going to be there, however, many times in our life. And if we want to get away from that and be free of those kinds of things and have the purity of life and the peace of life, that really is what God would have, we'll take that way of escape with the temptation, not the forgiveness that comes later after we fail to take that way of escape and have inflicted upon ourselves harm that can never be undone. When we talk about the temptation and how to escape it, we remember 2 Peter chapter 2. There the false teachers that we looked at before had brought a way of condemnation and ultimately were trying to bring people to destruction through their false ways. But it says, then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. When we're tempted, do we think about that? I'm going to hold on to God's hand. And I'm going to go a different path because I know the people who are doing this, God's reserving them for a judgment of condemnation. Do we think about with which path we're going, with whom we're going to associate? Because if we're going to associate with God who delivers and brings us away from it, then we're going to be in a better way. You remember the story of Lot? That here was a city to be destroyed, Sodom and Gomorrah were going to be brought to be absolutely consumed by God. What happened? God sent the angel, bring them by the hand out of Sodom. When they did that, where did God lead them? He led them to a place of safety. But Lot's wife looked back. She longed for that of the past. Did she get to that safety? She was holding on to what was there in the sin. It's God who's able to deliver us out of the temptation. It's God who's able to deliver us from the things that that temptation will bring us to. But if we hold on with the world and the things of evil, then we're not going to escape that sin. We're going to be involved in it, and it's going to be to our detriment. In James, the first chapter, a little bit before the context that we've read as the text for this lesson. In James chapter 1 and in verse 2, he starts out by saying, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, and that word is temptations, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. I'm persuaded that the idea of trials or temptations there is used in that general sense of being encompassing of all. That is, that it's talking about the things of testing or trials, whatever they be. Not just the things of enticement, evil, but in everything in this life. But by saying that, I'm also pointing out that involved in that is that enticement to evil. Now, what does God say about that? When we fall into those, then we can count it joy. When we have the things happen to us in our life of difficulties in our health, or difficulties in a situation of a job that might be lost, or whether it be different things that are there, or things that happen to us of people deserting, leaving, and abusing us, we have the opportunity to do what's right and to show others they can be in a time of weakness and yet not get in to that kind of a state that gives up, that just is dejected and leaves in a lack of faith and falling away from God. But with respect to temptation specifically, we ought to count it all joy when what? When the various things that are there, because we've got our opportunity to stand up and say no to the devil. That's what Jesus did. When the devil came to tempt him in the wilderness, Jesus was not discouraged in all of that. He was at the time of a low point in his life, having fasted 40 days and 40 nights. that he was joyful for the opportunity to stand and do that which was right. You look at John 17, you see the same thing. Jesus, in the last night of his life, is there about to be crucified the next day, and he knows it. And what does he say? That he's thankful for this opportunity in his life, that he had had in his life to be able to bring people the light of the gospel, the truth, that would sanctify them and set them free just as it could others. You know, you and I, when we face temptations to be involved in sin, ought not to look at that as, oh, here's another oppression that comes upon me. The other side of that is the side that says, this is my chance to say no. This is my chance to overcome. How many times have we failed in our lives, done that which is wrong? Now here comes along another temptation, maybe that same one that's gotten us before. And we duck our heads and we tend to be those people who almost act like, well, I'm a slave now, I can't help it, I've done it before. Yes, you can. The Lord is there ready to help. He's that one who has the hand that can provide that way of escape. What I need to do now is to have the courage to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I need to have that kind of a joy that says, while I've lost in the past, I'm not going to lose today. I'm going to do what's right. You know, when we do that, we can count it all joy when we fall into those temptations, because now is our opportunity to stand up and do what's right before God. In Hebrews chapter 2 and in verse 8, we see the ultimate expression of that in Jesus. In Hebrews chapter 2 and in verse 18, for in that he, speaking of Jesus, in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he was able to aid those who are tempted. There's another reason we ought to be thankful for it. Jesus was the one who, when he was tempted, said no, and what was the result? The result is he's given that example for you and me. You know, to a lesser extent, we can do the same thing. Fathers, when you have an opportunity to stand for what's right, and it's not the easiest thing to do, it's not the popular thing to do, it's not the thing that would cause you great acclaim, you have a chance to teach your children something when you stand for right. Your children see that, and even though they might not like it at the present point, when you stand for that truth, you give them the opportunity to see what that looks like. And to understand that that is a way of nobility and honor. And you get them to follow that path. When a father comes along and, as a leader of the home, is going to take that easy path and be overcome by that temptation, how difficult does he make it for his wife and for his family and for his grandchildren ultimately to go that same way? It takes a father of courage to stand up and be different. It takes a father of courage like it did in Joshua and Caleb, who stood up regardless of what the majority said and stood with God and said, what God has promised, he's able to deliver. That's what you need to do. Mothers, same thing. When temptation comes along the way, you can be that hand of strength within the family by doing that which is right, by standing up and saying no to the things of evil. I tell you what, your children are going to remember that. They're going to be taught by that every day of their life. Jesus, as he stood up and said no to the devil, and as he faced temptation all the way through and continued to negate its influence, he still is our example today and our ultimate example. How can we defeat temptation? By looking to Jesus and being the same way. And one more thing, over in Revelation chapter 3 and in verse 8, statement that is here made by Jesus, he says to the church that is being spoken to at Philadelphia, he says, I know your works, See, I have set before you an open door, and no one can shut it. For you have a little strength, and have kept my word, and have not denied my name. Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan, who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet, and to know that I have loved you. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. What did he say to this church? He talked to five others and he didn't have as good of things to say to them. Only two were commended entirely. The church at Philadelphia, he said, I know your works. That's how he started out. And you know that's true with us. God knows our works. He sees every temptation we face. He knows not only what we do overtly in our action, he knows our thought process in going through that. And what he could say to this church was, I know your works. I know that you've been tried. I know that you've gone through difficulty. I know that you've had those call upon you to deny my name, but you didn't do it. And as a result, he said, you've overcome. You continue in that path. And ultimately, there will be that crown of life. Doesn't that give you confidence in facing temptation? Temptation hasn't overtaken everybody. There have been those who have said no to temptation. Is it true that people have said at least once in their life, yes, and have sinned? Yes. But the fact of it is, I don't have to. I didn't have to then, I don't have to now, and neither do you. What we need to do is recognize with that temptation, God gives a way of escape. He gives His Word. He gives His help. He gives His strength. He gives prayer. He gives others who are people who are examples to us. And in all that way, there is that ability to say no to that sin and leave it and go and be with God. Ultimately, what God intends with every temptation is for us to say no in that sense of being purified to bring us to a place in the end of a crown of life. Over in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, the Apostle Paul had compared that to a temporal crown, if you will, a victory crown from a kind of a physical pursuit in some games that were present. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 24, he says, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now, they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we an imperishable crown. You know, you look at our society that's filled with all kinds of things of some athletics. Maybe that you'd say, well, winning the World Series, that'd be the greatest thing. Get that ring that's there. Or maybe it's the Super Bowl. Or maybe it's the Stanley Cup if you're a hockey fan or whatever. All of those are temporal. All of those are passing. They're nothing compared to that crown which will be received in the end. Now, what's the frame of mind that's going to get me to that thing in the end? Any of you have ever been through athletics, I suspect you've gone through the same thing that I did when I was there. And that is, nobody else mattered with regard to their output. You worked in such a way that it was the hardest you possibly could, and you kept that focus on challenging every bit, doing everything that you could. You hoped that others were doing the same thing, but that was your commitment. And if we did that and got to those ultimate kind of places in athletics with that reward, so what? In the end, that's not going to help us a whole lot. After all, we all know a fellow who got the Heisman Trophy, but he's sitting in a jail right now. Doesn't do him a whole lot of good, does it? The fact of it is, we're trying to get a reward that is eternal, that's incorruptible. And we compete in such a way that we're absolutely determined with all that's in us, we're going to give ourselves to the Lord. That's the way Paul was in 2 Timothy chapter 4. As he talked about there, he said, I've fought the good fight, I've finished the race, I've kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me in that day. Not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. That's what I'm looking forward to, are you? When we get through temptation, there's something better there than overcoming any obstacle that's a part of this world. A little child, when they're crawling, and they first get up to walk, and they can make those steps, and they start going, that smile comes up. Bright as can be, they've overcome. That's a nice thing to see. But the greatest of all is that crown of life that Paul says is given after I've fought. After I've kept the faith. Then there's a crown of life waiting. The walking in into the heavenly gates. The joys that are there in heaven is going to be worth everything that we've had to go through in this world. I'm persuaded that 5 minutes into heaven, anything that we've suffered in this life will mean absolutely nothing to us. That's how God wants us to face temptation. He wants us to face temptation in such a way that we're looking at it as a way to be one who's purified and ultimately goes to heaven. Are you using temptation to bring its intended effect upon you that God has in mind? Am I? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. If you're here this morning having never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ,